You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different with the ESO Network Patreon. The cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
Welcome to episode 205 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman, The Adventures Continue, number 12, Dark Knight's Death Metal Trinity Crisis, Justice League Odyssey, number 24, Nightwing, number 74, Teen Titans, Annual, number 2, Superman, number 25, The Green Lantern, season 2, number 7, Wonder Woman, number 762, and DC Fandom, Explore the Multiverse. But before we get into our comic books talk tonight, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman, The Adventures Continues, number 12. So, the issue opens up with Alfred finishing his story about Jason Todd to Tim. We see Joker beats Jason nearly to death with a crowbar, and we see that Harley objects, but the Joker has his goons take Harley away. Batman shows up before the Joker can finish the job, and Joker orders his men to shoot Batman. And of course, there are tanks of hydrogen that explode. We see Joker's getaway car lands on top of him. Now, Batman frees Jason from his bonds, and Jason begs Batman to kill Joker. We see Batman picks up the crowbar and walks over to the Joker, but instead of beating him with it, Batman uses it to free Joker and take him into custody. There is another explosion, and then Jason is gone. We find out that Batman spent weeks looking for clues to Jason in the wreckage and months trying to find him. In the end, Jason's gone. Now, in the present, Batman returns to the Batcave and states that what happened to Jason was the biggest mistake of his life. Batman holds out his hand and Tim takes it and flips him over, stating, "I'd be a sorry excuse for a Robin to fall for that crap." Tim saw through Jason's disguise because Batman would never apologize for making a mistake. Alfred tries to capture Jason, but he uses a batarang on him. Tim attempts to stop Jason, but Jason gets the upper hand and takes Tim as hostage.
I was curious, when he had Robin tied up, I was actually wondering, I was like, man, this hasn't been as dark. I mean, because it's based off of the animated universe, I thought, well, I don't know if they're going to go there or not. And then they did.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was interesting, the twist that they put on the Jason story, is that a lot more of it is his fault. He is a lot more antagonistic in the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, in the original Death in the Family, like, it's certainly it's certainly his fault that he gets in that situation in a sense, but like after that, the onus is like entirely on the Joker.
Right.
Right. It's not really like Jason is definitely the victim in that story. Whereas in this one, like, he is certainly a victim, but then like it's much more directly caused by his actions. Like, the Joker's really only doing this in a sense out of, I thought it was interesting. take for the Joker too, because the Joker is almost acting out of self-defense in a way, because he sees what Jason is doing.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting. And so it's really a lot more of this is on Jason in the first place. And then Batman comes in and actually saves him, unlike, you know, Death in the Family. But then Jason again causes it to get worse. So I thought that was interesting how much more antagonistic he is in this. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, not just now, it's not like he is the victim like he usually is, and then that causes him to become antagonistic. Like, he's pretty antagonistic throughout the entirety of his story in this version.
Yeah, he definitely is. The only reason the Joker went after him was because of a preemptive strike, pretty much. If I remember right, him and Harley were watching stuff on TV. It's when he noticed that Jason was being really aggressive towards the villains, even almost shooting Killer Croc, so...
The thing I didn't totally agree with, like, I know, you know, Batman's pretty hard-headed, but, like, knowing it's not him because he apologized, like, really? I feel like Batman would apologize to Robin?
That version of Batman certainly would.
Right? That's what I was going to say. I was like, there are certainly versions of Batman that I've read that, yes, like, the really sociopathic ones, but, like... Like, maybe the Frank Miller one probably wouldn't apologize, but I feel like the Deeney Tim version would, right? Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I thought that was kind of out of character for this version of Batman, never to apologize.
Or to be so out of character that Tim would immediately know that that's Jason. That was the thing that got me. It was like, I understand. I'm not saying that, you know... This version of Batman is super in touch with his feelings, but, like, so much so that they know immediately. That was, I thought, a little odd. That being said, I've, for the most part, really enjoyed this version of the Jason Todd story. I mean, we kind of talked about, I wondered how necessary it was, because in the most part, it still is retreading a lot of ground. But it does make me more so question the majority of this series, because this feels like the story that they actually wanted to tell the whole time. Like, there's a different level of attention to detail and care I've noticed these past few issues. Like, there's just more heart in it, and it makes me wonder why they were treading water with some of the other ones.
Yeah, I see what you mean about that. One thing I wanted to say about the animated series Batman, he seems to be this version of Batman seems to be more in a balance with his Bruce Wayne life and his Batman life compared to some other versions of Batman we've seen.
Absolutely. He's definitely one of the healthier Batmans mentally, right? For sure.
And with Jason being so antagonistic, this version of Jason doesn't feel like it should go with this version of Batman. You know what I mean?
I would agree with that. No, I absolutely agree with you. It feels a lot like the modern Jason Todd in a lot of ways. Like, it that feels like the kind of characterization we've read of him, you know, and like in the current continuity.
Right.
But I mean he's certainly not borderline villainous right now, but you know what I mean? Like, that level of violence and whatnot, that seems fitting, but like you said, that doesn't fit with the world that the story is being told in.
He's borderline villain right now. I mean, his only goal seems to be revenge on Batman.
And the tagline at the end of the issue would have you believe that his goal is to kill Tim. So, I mean, that would be just outright villain. Like, we're not even walking the line at that point.
Yeah. So, I'm curious to see what's going to happen. What is strange is this is issue number 12. So, we know there's an issue 13. I don't know how long this is supposed to go for. I don't think it's an ongoing. I was pretty sure it was a limited series. I was surprised it was going past issue 12.
Yeah, I'll admit, I was like about halfway through, I was like, wait, this is 12? I thought it might be, I certainly didn't know it was ending, but I was in the back of my head, I was like, this would be a time that a mini series would usually end, and I don't think we're going to end. And obviously we didn't. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't complain, because if it had ended this issue, that would not been very good. But I'm legitimately curious how many more issues we're getting of this story.
I am too.
Or just, you know, the overall story, not just this one.
Right. So, all right. I guess they'll keep us guessing for now. All right. Let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal Trinity Crisis. Now, when the issue opens up, we learn that Perpetua thrives on crisis energy. It's what she's using to destroy reality. It's coming from the dark multiverse. Wonder Woman's plan is for Batman, Superman, and herself to go into Castle Bat with Jaro cloaking them from detection. And their plan is to enter the dark multiverse and find the crisis worlds and capture their energy into these Alfred boxes. We also see Harley, Swamp Thing, and Jonah Hex are going to accompany them. Now, Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl are to take a team to destroy Perpetua's throne so that the energy can be rerouted to Wally. And then John Stewart will lead the Lanterns on a mission to destroy Perpetua's antennas that are on the remaining Earths of the multiverse and to save all the people imprisoned on them. Now, with the help of Swamp Thing, we see the DC Trinity and their team are able to gain access to Castle Bat. And we also see that there's a team of Bat villains already there ready to take them on. So the Bat villains team was Chiropator, Ark, the Pearl, which is a Bat version of Martha Wayne, Black Monday, and Cole. Once the team gets past these Bat villains, they come across Barbados, who is in chains and who Superman quickly shuts him up. We see Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman move on to the different crises. Batman goes to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Superman goes to Final Crisis. And Wonder Woman goes to the Infinite Crisis. And what they find out on these crises is the heroes lose.
I don't know why this was a surprise to the Trinity. Like, oh, she's been the Batman who laughs from the dark multiverse created these. Like, of course it's the versions where they lose.
I know. I thought that was kind of silly. They didn't figure that out before.
Like, they just thought it was just a perpetual loop of them winning and then starting over again. Like, come on. I enjoyed this issue a lot, although it does, like, there was so much story in this. I mean, this is absolutely, if you are interested in the death metal comic, you have to read this. I mean, it's the next chapter in the story. I don't know why it
wasn't part of the main part of the story.
Well, I mean, actually, that makes sense because this was probably two issues worth of story, I would say. It wasn't exactly the length of two issues, but you know what I mean? Like, it's more than one regular issue. And that would have made they would have had to have made Death Metal a longer series, and I imagine that has to be why they did this, where he must have had close to like a 10 or 12 issue story, and they figured out, well, we can't do that, so how can we essentially do that while labeling them technically different issues? Like, as a trade, there's no way this doesn't come right last issue of Death Metal. Like, chronologically, it's the next thing you have to read. The next step in the story.
I know. It just feels weird being in a different issue because it's should be part of that story. So,
and I think the thing they risk is because there's so many event comics are so prevalent and done at this point that most comic readers kind of have a feel for them. And I feel like for the most part, when they have like some sort of special one shot come out with them, they're inconsistently at best worth reading, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And so I think you run the risk of people not buying this issue that would, like, people that would buy this because they're buying Death Metal, not because they think, oh, it's just some, you know, special, I don't need to read that. But you do. And I understand they probably didn't want to have a 12-issue event comic, and that's why we're getting this issue the way it is. But, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I worry that they may have, and I don't know if it's significant enough to matter, but I worry that they may have lost some readers on this one.
That's possible. Of course, if we go with the fact that a lot of people are just waiting and buying the trades, then they might not even miss a beat. Yeah.
Yeah. So. No, that's a good. That's a great point. I liked this issue quite a bit, and it was really cool going. Like, I'm looking forward to whether it's the next regular issue or if it's another one shot, whatever it is. I'm looking forward to spending more time in these old Crisis worlds, just because those are three really great DC stories, and it's kind of fun remembering those old continuities. And I love. It continues the theme, even within this story, that everything matters. It's sort of reminding, like, hey, remember these stories? These were great stories, and they should matter again. Like, it should, you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't have this great story that you love just not count for anything anymore. I continue to greatly appreciate Snyder's central thesis of his whole thing.
Right. Plus, he gives us a twist on it, so it's not exactly the same either, so...
Right. Yeah, exactly. This makes me wonder, with Superboy Prime popping back up in this, you know, is that more of the reason why John's pulled him out? Not necessarily because of this, but like, is DC wanting to do something with that character again? And that's why we're, you know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to figure, because I know that is John's baby. I know he didn't create the character. It was, you know, he first appeared in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but like that, like the version of Superboy Prime that we know in terms of modern comics is John's thing. So I understand his urge to bring that character back, but the thing is, Shazam was just so nonsensical. This makes far more sense, and I wonder if it's something where John's or somebody else really is wanting to use that character again, and that's why we're seeing it pop more, or if it's just coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this was he was a major mid-2000s villain in DC Comics. I mean, you had, obviously, he's one of the major villains in Infinite Crisis. But then, again, because he's John's, you know, pet character in a sense, we see him pop up in Green Lantern. He's a major character in that for, like, the middle of that run.
Yeah, he is.
And he even had his own... He was the main character of Action Comics for a while. Like, there was... He had a pretty big run there for a bit before he disappeared off the face of the earth. So it's cool. It's cool bringing that. And it fits. Again, it's one of those things. It fits, regardless of what Johns is doing, it fits with this story of, you know, making things matter again. That's a major DC character that just hasn't been around.
Right.
So it's cool that we're getting that back.
Right. And that's not always a bad thing for villains to disappear for a while and come back, because.
Right. But not for a decade.
I know.
Like, I totally agree with you. Like, we've talked about this there. You can do too many Joker stories. And I agree. You don't want the villain around all the time. But like, Superboy Prime was gone for like the entirety of the New 52. And like, really, just until, like, the Shazam, I think, is the first time he's popped up.
I think you're right.
Since the New 52, I think.
So, yeah. So, maybe they're bringing him back, or maybe we're just going to see him in this event. Who knows?
But, yeah.
But he is a great villain, so.
Yeah.
And John's made him that way.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it was really... It's funny when you think about it, because he was such a major presence, but he was really just a major presence because Johns was dominating the comics at that point.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he just doesn't do as much stuff anymore.
But he,
not with
he
comics, sort of did
anyways. He did his job too well, in a sense. He got promoted up,
yeah,
to the point where he wasn't really involved in the comics, and that was, I don't think, ultimately beneficial for either party in the end.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 24. So the issue opens up in Epoch's revision mechanism chamber. Ala Hax asks for Darkseid's forgiveness after betraying him to join the Justice League Odyssey. He grants her forgiveness for her part in securing Epoch's machine, and her punishment is to serve him now and activate the revision mechanism. We see Jessica, Cyborg, Blackfire, and Orin are able to make it to one of Epoch's workshops. Jessica uses a time crystal to bring back the original Justice League Odyssey. So we see Starfire and Cyborg and Azrael all return before they are manipulated by Darkseid. Now, Darkseid, with Arla Hax's help, initiates the machine, which causes Sepulchre to cease and Apocalypse to return. The ghost worlds are put back to their original locations. At the end of the issue, the Justice League Odyssey race to destroy the machine and keep Darkseid from rewriting history.
I liked the Darkseid parts of this issue. I kind of liked the way that you saw him threaten / bribe people to his side, you know, just through a combination of fear and power. That was cool. And it's cool kind of seeing the puzzle coming together of this story as a whole. Like, you can kind of see where they're going with it. Like, you can sort of piece together how they're going to essentially hit the reset button and wrap the story up, which I think will be, you know, relatively satisfying. But then it becomes one of those things, I think you and I both assume, for the most part, obviously, you know, they'll be changed by the journey, but for the most part, nothing major is going to come out of this other than Darkseid will be, you know, Darkseid, and it looks like Apocalypse will probably also be fully back. But then that really puts the weight of the story being on the journey, right? It's the journey, not the destination. I don't know that the journey as a whole was good enough.
And I have to agree with you on that. I don't think so either. Ultimately, everything's going to return back to what it was before.
Right.
And
yeah,
I don't
it
know.
Seems like essentially the only thing that this long-term accomplished, which, again, stories don't need to do that, but it seems clear that essentially this story was, in a sense, told to reestablish Darkseid and Apocalypse, which it's done by the end of this issue, and I'm assuming that that will stick. Those two things, but then, like you said, nothing else is really for it, which is fine as long as the story you're telling is good. Like, at that point, it's like, okay, well, I mean, it's not a meaningful in terms of continuity story, whatever, but was it a good story? Not really, at least not for me.
Yeah, not for me either. One thing I did enjoy about the series so far is Jessica stepping up. I did really like her leadership in this, and I want to see more of that from her after this series, but I don't know if we're going to get it or not.
I agree with you. I thought one thing I think is a shame, though, is that, like, I get it because they want to restore the regular Green Lantern version of her, but the one that came back and the one that I think we can assume is the one that will essentially become the one remaining in the timeline is the one that hadn't yet done those things, right? It's the one that didn't take over.
Yeah.
And do all those things. So I don't know. That's a shame. Cause like, it's like, she was the main character of the entire back half of the story. Like, the, you know,
yeah,
but really without question. And that one at least appears, based on this, appears to be the one that'll go away. So it's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, it is. And I'm pretty sure this wraps next issue. So I think the next issue is the last of the series.
I can't see how it would be going more than one. Like, I don't know how you would drag out this more than one issue, if I'm being honest. You'd have to really stretch out the plot.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Nightwing number 74. So the issue opens up with Bea running through the streets of Gotham looking for Rick Grayson. She finds him standing with Tim Drake as Robin and the Red Hood. The trio is ready to take on the Joker's goons at the Children's Hospital. That is until Dickie Boy starts babbling about dead kids' bodies, and that's when the Red Hood realizes it was him he was fighting a few hours ago. Which, I don't know how he couldn't figure that out before, but whatever. So we see Dickie Boy attacks Drake and the Red Hood. Joker and Punchline are watching and enjoying the fight from a rooftop. Batgirl shows up and steals the crystal from Joker. And when Dickie Boy pulls a gun on the Red Hood, Batgirl swings down and stops him. And When Dickie Boy pulls the gun on Batgirl, Bia steps in and tries to convince Rick who he really is. And she gives him the crystal, and all the false memories leave, and his true history returns to his mind. When B asks Rick if he is okay, he says he's not Rick. He's Dick. Just then, Batman swings in, and Batman explains that he's been keeping an eye on Dick and waiting for him to get through the fog on his own. That's how Batman would have wanted it if it was happening to himself, he said. Now, we see Tim was able to disarm the bomb, and of course, Joker and Punchline hightail it out of there when Batman showed up. And at the end of the issue, Dick wonders where B went. We see her walking down an alley crying that Gotham took Rick away from her. We knew this was coming. We knew the return of Dick was coming really soon, and I'm glad it finally happened. One of the things I had problem with, why is his girlfriend walking away crying? I realized the Rick persona is gone, but I mean, she can still have a relationship with Dick. It's not like Dick's memory of her is totally gone. I just thought that was weird ending to the issue.
Well, I mean, that's assuming that the rest of the issue was well written, though, Drew. I think my biggest takeaway from this was, like, it's a shame that this is the story that returns Dick Grayson to being Nightwing. You know what I mean? Like, when this becomes an era, what I have to give DC credit, I really didn't think that this status quo would last long enough for people to really remember it and be worth remembering. But I feel like they did drag it out long enough that it is, in a sense, an era of Dick Grayson, which is shocking. But then on the downside of that is that, A, a lot of the stories weren't worth reading in the first place, but B, the story that returns him to being Dick Grayson is bad. This was not good. This was just not good writing. I mean, say what you want about the plot line, but just the writing of it was not good. It just wasn't for me, at least for me. And I also, I do appreciate the attempt to make it relevant to the Joker War. And they even had a reference to what happened in Batgirl, which I will give them props for. But it still doesn't make sense as a side story to Joker War, right? Like, it just, this doesn't feel like it lines up right with what's going on in that main story. Maybe that's because we've seen so little of what the Joker's actually doing. But it's just, it's not the same Joker. Like, the Joker that's being portrayed here is just not the same guy.
I agree with you on that. And the other thing is, it feels weird that Joker's taking a break what he's doing in the main Batman title to come do this side thing. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So
It just doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense as, like, it doesn't, if you think about this happening in parallel to what's going on in the main story, it doesn't really fit how Joker's got the time to do this. And then again, the characterization of the two is just, the characterization in the main book is a very different Joker that's kind of, at least looks like he's trying to go for the checkmate on Batman, which he never does. Whereas this version in the comic that we read today is very much just like your typical Joker, and especially on the, like, on the lighter side of Joker.
Yeah.
Too. So it was just, it just didn't, I don't know. I think it's a shame that this is how he becomes Nightwing again. Like, it just felt wasted. I would have liked, honestly, to have seen it happen in the main Batman title, because I think it probably would have been handled a little bit better. It would have meant a little more. Like, this just, it's just an inconsequential story. You know what I mean? Like, there was no, it wasn't like I would ever worried that the Joker was actually going to have a lasting impact on him. The idea of the crystal thing in the first place is silly at best.
I have to agree with you on that.
It just doesn't fit with, like, it's a comic booky thing, sure, but, like, that's something that I would read in, like, Justice League Dark or Young Justice, even. You know what I mean? Like, something like that. But a Batman book, especially a Batman book that's supposed to be tying into the Joker War. Like that just doesn't fit. It just didn't jive with the story that it was trying to tell. And it just, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to agree with
you. It is what it is. I appreciated some of the stuff it was trying to do. It just was very poorly executed and just in general didn't fit with what Batman's trying to do.
And I have to agree with you on the point that they should have fixed Dick in the regular Batman title. I mean, that's where it happened in the first place. And I have a feeling we would have gotten a better story for it.
Well, I mean, it would have been a different writer. So
that's true. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Teen Titans Annual Number 2. And I know it's been quite a while since we looked at the Teen Titans, but when we first started reviewing Teen Titans, this version of Teen Titans, Damian had become the leader of the team, and we knew he built a prison under their building that he was going to house the villains in. And what he'd been doing is they've been imprisoning the villains they were fighting there, and Robin was wiping their minds. When we pick back up with what's going on in the Titans right now, in this beginning of this issue, we find out Batman confronts Damian about killing Brother Blood. So he's actually killed Brother Blood. And then also in Teen Titans number 44, the Teen Titans stop Robin from killing the KG Beast for what he did to Nightwing. So he came across him and was going to kill him in that issue, and the Titans stopped him. We see that
one thing just real quick before you go on with the plot is you were talking about how we hadn't really, you know, focused on this storyline that much. I was surprised at how like true to the initial premise the comic still was, if that makes sense. Like, this was still clearly the logical continuation of that first issue. And I was, for the number of issues that series is at this point, that's impressive.
That is impressive. So they've had a planned out story with this. So
I didn't feel that confused jumping into the story because of that, because the status quo, obviously things had happened and the issue, as most comics do a good job of letting you know kind of where these things happen. But like giving me that update was all I really needed. Everything else sort of fit. It was like, yeah, that makes sense. That's a logical thing to have happened, you know, projecting the storyline forward. So I was impressed with the continuity of the story, if that makes sense.
All right. Well, we see that Deathstroke attacks the Teen Titans because a contract has been taken out on them. And I can tell you the contract that's been taken out on them has been with the villains they've been dealing with during this series. So it's them wanting to get back at the Titans. He states that he would have done it for free. And from his experience, the only way to take down the Teen Titans is to take out the Robin first. So Deathstroke is really after Damian at this point. Now, right when Deathstroke's about to take out Damian, the rest of the Teen Titans show up. Deathstroke fights against all the Teen Titans, and Robin gets the opportunity to take out Deathstroke with his sword. But we see Red Arrow stops him, and Amico gets wounded by Robin's blade, and we see Wally West kind of speeds her away. Batman shows up again, and it's father versus son. Robin attacks Batman, but Batman only defends himself. Damian asks Batman why he won't fight back, and Batman responds that he loves him and he has failed him. We see Damian rips the R off his costume and states, "You will never truly see me as long as I'm in your shadow." And Batman calls after him Robin, but Damian states, "No, I was Robin, and now I'm finally free." And the issue ends there. This is a really important Bat Family moment. And it kind of explains what, I mean, if you weren't reading this title, you wouldn't know any of this was going on. It makes sense why Tim has the Robin costume again, though they haven't really fully explained that. And we don't know what's going on with Damian right now, besides he quit. We don't know where he's going, what he's going to be doing, or anything like that. It's kind of all up in the air. And I'm very curious what their what DC's plan is for Damian going forward. Are they just done with him? Is he going to come back at some point? I'm just really curious.
Well, I think Damian's part of this at least makes sense. Like, you can see the groundwork for this being laid all the way back in the first issue of this run, right?
Right.
So that part doesn't feel out of the blue. It's the Tim jumping back in as Robin is the one that doesn't really fit. And even if you noticed in the Dick Grayson Nightwing issue that we read, like, they're de-aging Tim to make him fit that role. Like, he's definitely younger.
See, that's
without
what
question.
I thought he looked younger too. This is weird.
I mean, he was being drawn essentially as Damian. In my opinion, the way that the artist drew him in Nightwing was if he was Damian's age.
Hmm. Really curious what they're planning on doing. So
I am. I am too. I don't know. There's definitely a plan for Damian. I don't expect Damian to go away. I think there's probably some story there. And I feel like in the meantime, what it feels like to me is that there was some boss, whether that's an actual comic boss or somebody above them, that was like, well, you need to still have a Robin. And so then Tim was the most logical choice to be Robin. But then you're stuck with the fact that Robin's a college student. You know, Tim is a college student. It's weird seeing Robin as that old. Like, even if you think about the live action version in Titans that we were watching, like, it was kind of odd seeing Dick Grayson still wearing a Robin costume, wasn't it? Like, it was like, you're a little old for that. And so I feel like they were like, well, somebody essentially said, well, if you're going to do whatever this story is where Damian's not going to be Robin for a while, you need to have a Robin. Robin's a kid. And so then we're just going to inexplicably de-age Tim Drake. I think that's it. I think it's just going to, from what I can tell, they're not going to address it. They're just going to, Tim Drake is just Robin again. Like, literally the Young Justice issue that we saw, it was just like, yeah, he's Robin now, with no explanation. So I think they're just going to de-age him and act like nothing happened. Like, they're basically just going to pretend like that was just how it was.
I could see them doing that too. I'm really curious what they're planning on transforming Damian into. Is he going to become a new character? I mean, a new superhero character? And is he going to evolve into something that's more like the Red Hood? Where he's willing to kill? Or are they going to do something different? What's your thoughts?
I mean, he is sort of a logical that character to be like the Red Hood. The problem is that the Red Hood exists, right? Like, that role's already being filled, which I think is tough. I don't know. I think they will probably try and give him some sort of new identity, whether that's an antagonistic identity or, you know, somewhere in between, like some anti-hero kind of role. I just don't know that it'll stick. Like, to me, he was always the most logical character to be Robin in a way. Like, he was the one that sort of, like, if you wanted, in a sense, and I know comics always change and evolve, but if you wanted a sort of permanent solution to Robin, it makes sense for it to be Batman's son, right? Because Batman's not going to age, and so you can always just kind of have his son be a kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So it just, to me, it always seemed like he was sort of, not just because he's Batman's kid, but just like, he just made sense to be Robin because he was the easiest to kind of keep as a child. And like, so much of his identity, I feel like, is based around that sort of, you know, youth and immaturity. You know, that just seems like a part of his character, that he's not as grown up as he thinks he is. That just feels like a central part of his character. And so I think they'll probably try something else, and I'm not saying it'll be bad. It might be good. I just don't know that it'll stick, because it just makes so much sense, at least to me. It makes so much sense for him to be Robin. It's hard for me to picture something else working better than that, and that there being a better Robin in terms of logical fit than him. I'm not, like, I like Tim Drake a lot, so it's not like I'm complaining that he's Robin again. That's fine. Tim Drake can also work in other roles. We've seen him be Red Robin, in a sense, which is like a little bit of an older version, which I think, just to me, that fits Tim Drake better. you know, we've seen Dick Grayson be Robin. We've seen these other guys. It's not like I'm opposed to seeing those versions or different people be Robin. I just don't know what else you do with Damian in the long run. Like, I can see you trying something, but I feel like inevitably you would just circle back around to him being Robin again.
That may very well be what happens. I'm curious what they're going to do with him. In the next issue of Teen Titans, that's after this issue, Red Hood shows up looking for him. I'm not sure why he's chasing after him. And then we also see Superboy show up. So he's looking for Damian too. So I'm kind of curious how that's going to pan out when they actually find him. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Superman number 25. The cover to this story is very misleading because the Simnar don't actually engage Superman in this story, but they kind of admire him from afar. And they admire him so much that they decide to create their own version of Superman, who seems to fail by the end of this issue. And honestly, I'm not even sure what the point of that part of the story is and why it needs to be continued. I don't know if they're trying to turn that guy into a villain or something, but it was weird.
Oh, he's definitely going to investigate. But now that he knows that Superman is a thing and that's what he was supposed to be, you can tell where the story's going with that.
Yeah. So now the other part of this story focuses on Lana Lang. And we see Clark ask her to go to the school dance and gets turned down. So this is in the past. And then they move forward in time a little bit and we see that Lana's at the Daily Star. And a battle happens outside the studio window between Superman and Lex. And we also see a flashback of Lana when she was Superwoman at the beginning of Rebirth. So we get to see a little bit of that.
Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah, I remember that. Now in the present, we see that Lana has come to visit Clark, who is showing her a bunch of pictures of Lois and Jonathan and what their life is like now. And when Clark has to run off to Star City, we see that Lana is looking through the yearbook. And she gets this weird look on her face, and I wasn't sure if she was feeling jealous of Lois or that was for something else. I was curious what your take on it, that scene was.
So we see two different faces, right? We see the face where it looks like she's mainly looking at a picture of her and the date she took. And so I was a little confused at first too, but what I interpreted it, and this could be wrong, but how I interpreted the scene is that initial angry look we get is her sort of bitter memories of that guy. I think we're supposed to assume that that didn't end well.
Right? Okay.
And then the next look we see is when she sees in the other part of the picture, she sees a sad Clark in the background. And that's sort of like that we get a different look on her face. So the way I interpreted it was that she was sort of looking through the yearbook, remembered that moment, and was like, oh, that jerk, and then saw Clark. And I thought what we were supposed to kind of pick up on that was a sense of remorse on her part. Like, the life that Lois is having is the life that she could be living right now. And
okay.
She missed out.
That makes sense.
That's sort of what I felt like the story was trying to get at, that she had that chance, right? That opportunity was there in high school. And, you know, obviously you don't know that that's actually going to work out, but that chance was there, and she didn't take it. She went to the dance with the other guy. And now she's seeing this wonderful life, in at least in theory, that he's living with Lois and his son. And I think, to me, I thought we were meant to glean sort of a tinge of remorse on her part. Like, that could have been my life.
Okay, that makes total sense. Honestly, we could have left out the alien stuff of this story and just focused on Lana the whole time. Of course, I'm not quite sure there was enough story there to stretch out for a whole issue. But it was much more interesting than the alien stuff. At least to me, it was.
I'm going to actually disagree with you. This was actually my favorite issue of Bendis's run so far.
Oh, wow.
I really enjoyed both parts of the story. Like, I think most, if he had written this issue like most of his run, it would have just been all Lana Lang. And I think it would have been kind of boring, in my opinion. Because it was just sort of been, you know, really, I think if it had been only the Lana Lang story, I think both you and I would have been saying, like, what was the point of this issue? if I'm being completely honest with you. I think the alien part of it gave a sort of purpose to the story, because it's sort of, we're seeing a passage of time. The beginning of this comic, it is the destruction of Krypton. And so as we're getting, as the stories interchange, we're seeing Superman grow up and Lana sort of, you know, in, you know, through Lana's point of view. And then we're cutting back to the next, you know, time progression with the Sindar race. And so I thought it was a clever narrative device where they jump in time. So we see a slice in time with the Sindar. Krypton's destroyed. They're worried about the implications of that. Superman might turn into a sun god. That's concerning to them. Then we see, you know, high school age Clark, and we see how ridiculous that worry is. And then we see, we jump back to the Sindar, right? And they're like, oh, he's, you know, actually not a bad guy. And then what if, and, you know, and then they jump back and forth, and then we see sort of this progression of like, well, what if we had something like Superman? That seems like a good idea. And then we see that happen. I actually thought it was really fascinating, Drew, that we see this alien race. In a sense, they're almost like us, right? They're almost like reading Superman's story in the way that they're experiencing it. And they're like, well, what if we did that? That's working out phenomenally for Earth. What if we can do that? Let's make a Superman. And then we kind of see, we get the hint of how that goes, which is something clearly has not gone right with that. Something clearly what goes wrong at the end of the issue. Now, I'm not saying that this story is going to end amazingly, but I thought that this was one of the most interesting things Bendis has done. And I kind of wish we had gotten this was the most focused issue I think we've read. It was very clear. It was about the progression of the Sindar attempt at a Superman, in addition to Lana's, you know, kind of life viewing Superman becomes Superman.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the other ones have sort of bounced back and forth, and they're about this, and then they're about this, and they're about this, and it's just all sort of all over the place. This I thought was super focused, and thought had a really clear premise. What if an alien race, and I think we're meant to sort of place ourselves in that, what if we tried to have a Superman? I don't know. I thought it was really cool. I thought he did some impressive world building too with the limited time he spent with them. I'm looking forward to the next story of this. I am expecting to be disappointed though, if I'm being completely honest. I don't expect it to live up to the promise of the premise that he set up.
Maybe my problem with the aliens was they seemed very arrogant at the beginning of the issue. And
well, I mean, yeah. No disagree there. I don't know. I think that's sort of the point is that this is an extremely advanced race, right? Like, I think we're supposed to interpret that this is a very advanced race in comparison to Earth. And so in theory, right, on paper, they should have an even better Superman. Like, if Earth can get Clark, well, then whatever they're able to create should be even better than that. And then I think some of the best Superman stories are the ones that kind of touch on the fact that how ridiculous it is that somebody of Superman's power level is Superman and not Darkseid. Right? And I thought that this is one of the few stories that Bendis has really captured that theme without being super overt about it. I feel like a lot of other times he's tried to do that theme, but it's just really like in your face. I don't know. I liked what he was trying to do with this story, and I kind of wish that this is what more of his run had been. This was the first one to me that felt like it was less concerned with setting up, you know, multiple storylines and trying to set up multiple threads. It was just telling a story, and so few of his comics have actually just sat there and told a story.
That is true. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. The Green Lantern Season 2, Number 7. Hal Jordan died last issue, and these New Guardians have turned him into the Spectre. One of the New Guardians disconnects from the Union and becomes alone so he can experience division. And we see different women that Hal has dated in different colors of the Spectrum. I thought that was cool. Hal Jordan fights versions of himself until he explains that he's not divided, and he is a core. Hal Jordan becomes human again and the Green Lantern Corps is off to fight the Anti-World. Sorry, that's the best summary I can give you, because this is a very hard issue to understand.
I think, but that's basically it, though. I think that was ultimately what the issue was. There was a lot of Morrisonisms in there. But ultimately, I think you hit the plot exactly on this, Drew. That's ultimately what it was about. It was an oddly brief character summary, or character study, I should say, of Hal Jordan. I thought it was interesting because it seemed like that's ultimately what Grant was trying to get at, was this sort of, like, if you wanted to boil Hal down a little bit, it's sort of what he was trying to get at, but then it was just sort of really vague and quick, and then the story just continued. I don't know. It was the most Grant Morrison way to do essentially what really felt like a character study of Hal Jordan.
I have to say the artwork in this was pretty awesome. And I loved the page with the spectrum and the different girlfriends he had. Of course, some of them didn't make sense. I don't know why Carol was on green instead of, you know, the purple, but I don't know. I just thought the color schemes and stuff in the issue were really awesome.
No, I agree with you. I also like that page a lot. I did have to wonder how many of those were actual girlfriends and how much were just names that Grant pulled out. I will say, if anybody would know the names of seven different women that Hal has dated, it would be Grant Morrison. That dude knows his comic book history. But
I'm sure he went back and pulled all those names out during, probably going back all the way to the Golden Age.
Like I said, if there's one guy that would legitimately do that, it's definitely Grant Morrison.
I guess maybe not the Golden Age. I think Hal started in the Silver Age, so probably going all the way back to the Silver Age. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Woman number 762. When this issue opens up, we see that the world is in chaos. People everywhere are seeing hallucinations, and Wonder Woman and Edith Candy decide that they must work with Max Lord out in the field if they have any hope of stopping these hallucinations. And by the end of the issue, we see that Liar Liar has revealed herself to Diana, and Wonder Woman finds out that she's the daughter of Maxwell Lord. Now, I didn't particularly like the artwork in this story. Diana's hair had some really funky things going on in some of these panels.
No, I totally agree with you on that, Drew. It's the same artist as the last issue, and I mentioned it last time. It's a noticeable drop off from I'm blanking on the guy's name, but the artist that did the first two, that was on he did a lot of the Batman issues with Tom King. Those were really good, and then going from him to this is a downgrade. I don't disagree at all.
The story is really good though, and
yes,
if we had had the original artist on this part of the story, I think it would have improved the issue overall. But the story is still pretty good.
I agree with you completely. I mean, I've mentioned it before. A good artwork can really make a difference in it. I mean, there's a reason that comics aren't just a book, right?
Like, right.
it can make so. There's been some issues that we've read that I have enjoyed more than I think I should writing wise because the art is so good. It just kind of doesn't matter. And then likewise with this, I think the writing is just as good as the first two issues.
Yeah,
in my opinion, it just doesn't land the same way because the art's just not as good. And comics are so dependent on that word art relationship, and when it's skewed one way too much, it loses something.
Yeah, this story has been really interesting, and I did call it Liar Liar. She I can't remember the girl's name, but the girl with the rabbit. I had a feeling she was the villain.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm curious to see if this story is going to be a short arc or if it's going to build into something more than this. Like, are we just getting a six-issue story and the next story we read is completely disconnected or not? It feels like this could still be a pretty short self-contained story at this point, if I'm being honest.
It does. And, well, I depend how they end it depends on what's going to happen. I'm not sure what Liar Liar's goal is. It seems like she has an issue with her father. And it seems like she has an issue with Wonder Woman.
Well, from the previous issue, it seems like her goal is to essentially get her father to pay attention and love her. That's what it seems like. It seems like there's some daddy issues there. Whether that's the case or that changes, we'll see. But that seems to be the goal. And she seems to think that, you know, taking out Wonder Woman would be the way to do it, which, I mean, she might not be wrong. So. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this story wraps up. And it might not be, like, if it does just wrap up, that's fine. The only reason I would want it to go on longer is just because I'm enjoying this writer, and I just want more. I'm hoping that she's just not on for a short run herself.
Yeah, because we've had quite a few people recently be on short runs, so we'll have to.
We had G Willow Wilson. She had that decent run. We got a pretty decent run out of her. It was, what was it, like 20 issues or so?
Was it 20 issues?
Wasn't too bad. It wasn't that short. We got a decent chunk from her. And then Orlando picked up after, and his wasn't that long, but I also not that upset that wasn't that long.
Me too.
Yeah, Wilson's run wasn't too short. It was, I mean, I would have liked more because I liked her run. So I would have happily gotten more out of her, but it wasn't super short.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do DC News and Fandom News.
We are Nerdlanta.
We got these filters. I think they're called pee poppers.
That's for popping
exciting.
Peas.
Yeah. For popping all the peas.
Sweaty balls and pee poppers. Always in time.
Can a podcast be a reboot?
Oh, God, absolutely. Yes.
Nerdlanta,
yes.
That's awesome.
We are highly
committed
at
Omega Alley. You know, it's just always fun to talk about geeky stuff. And Nerdlanta is the place to do it.
I guess that's it. We played the promo. So.
Okay. That was an awesome promo.
And we're back. Let's talk some DC news. We had quite a bit of news come out before DC fandom stuff came out, so I wanted to kind of talk about that first before we get into the fandom stuff. First up, I have DC's new general manager, Senior Vice President Daniel Cherry III, officially began working for DC this week. And in a social media post, he's given a little bit of background on his comic book roots and his vision of DC going forward. And this is what he had to say. I have been a huge DC fan since I first discovered the joy of comics from my father, who collected Shazam oversized comics from the 70s. I am standing on the shoulder of giants like Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson, Bill Finger, Bob Kane, Neil Adams, Harry Lampert, and so many others. I'm especially proud to be continuing the legacy of fellow Ohioan and Cleveland native Jerry Siegel, who created Superman. It's my sincere hope that I am able to contribute and help evolve the brand and increase its relevance and impact for generations to come. I was kind of glad to see he put something out like this because I didn't realize this guy had a comics background at all. So that was nice to see.
I mean, he doesn't. He could just, I don't know. I mean, yes, I'm glad that he has read comic books. That is good. But I could also throw together a list of, yeah, I'm really inspired by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a cool, I'm just saying, Drew, it's not a cool, I'm not doubting that he read comic books, and that is good. I do like that. But also, it's not a coincidence, the names that he pulled out. I mean, come on. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like referencing your, you know, my favorite basketball players and listing like all of the greatest basketball players. Like Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. You know, like, is he wasn't listening. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, I don't know. It was nice. I'm fairly confident that that was, he was aided in writing that is all I'm saying. Okay. I could be wrong, but I don't know. I guess I'm just pessimistic.
Yes, and I'm optimistic. So that's where we're opposites. All right. Next in DC news, Tom King and Clay Mann's Batman Catwoman limited series has a release date of December 1st. I'm excited we got a release date, but it still feels far off.
Yeah. I know, especially because it was something in theory that I thought was supposed to come out originally close to the end of his Batman run.
Right, so.
But, I mean, ultimately, if that's what gives us a more cohesive, you know, release schedule and it let Clay Mann finish drawing the whole thing, that's, to me, especially, you know, we talk about this being in the age of trades, it's much more important than ever, I think, to be cohesive with your art, because most people are going to read it collected together, and it's much more jarring, the art shifts, when you're reading it in a trade.
I agree. All right, in our next bit of DC news, DC cancels Batman Beyond, and the series will be ending in December with issue number 50. At this point, I'm not surprised.
No, I'm going to be completely honest with you, Drew. I didn't even know it was still going. That's my own fault. I'm not saying that it was that obscure. I didn't know that. And the fact that it got to 50 is frankly impressive. In modern comic books, 50 is not easy to hit. Like, I know that feels like it, the older school of comics, that should be easy to hit. It's not. Not a lot of comic series reach 50 anymore, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. And in other DC news, something that really surprised me was Brian Michael Bendis is ending his Superman and Action Comics run in December. That surprised me. Didn't even feel like he's close to being anywhere near an end.
No, I am. I'm pretty frustrated by that. I know I've been fairly critical of his run, because it just feels like he's just been treading water. Like it felt like he kept setting stuff up to tell a story that he really wanted to tell, but then he never got around to telling that freaking story. like even within the main Superman book, the one that we read this week, I really liked that issue. You know what you didn't need to do? Any of the other stories that he told would not have affected the comic that we're reading right now. And so it's just like, well, part of me wonders, Drew, now, I had assumed, given Bendis's history and the usual pull that he has, that a lot of the creative decisions that we were seeing in terms of status quo for characters were his choice. And now part of me is wondering if that was really the case, or as if he was told, Superboy's got to do this, or Lois Lane needs to have this status quo, because ultimately, the things that I thought were things that he was changing didn't add up to anything. It just seems like a huge waste of time, frankly. What did he really accomplish with this story? No, I'm sorry, but there's nobody that's going to remember that first villain. I can't even remember his name at this point. But the one that dominated his run, I really don't think that's going to have a lasting impact. And that was ultimately what's going to be the majority of his run, was centered around that guy.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I don't think anything that Bendis has done is going to stick around. Especially Superman's Secret Identity. I don't think that's going to stick around that much longer after he's gone. I think somebody's going to come in and revert it back.
That, I will say, that's probably going to stick, because that's not an easy thing to undo. I agree. At some point, it will change. I don't think that's going to be that soon, though, to be honest with you. I think that's something that usually would get fixed in a crisis. And I'm hopeful, at least, that he's not going to do that for a while. Give us a break.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen after Snyder's event.
But to be fair, that would not be consistent with what Snyder is trying to do with that run, though, right? Like, the whole thing of his is to not undo stuff. It's
right.
That everything counts. So for him to then undo people knowing that Clark Kent is Superman would be, I think, the exact opposite of what he's been saying that comics should be doing. So I don't know. I could be wrong, but it would surprise me a lot if he was, if his story is the thing that resets Superman's identity. I think that would be everything that he's saying that comics shouldn't be doing right now.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know what Superman's going to look like after Bendis' run, but it's got to be more coherent than it's been lately.
It's just such a shame because you had in theory, you had the singular creative vision, right? You had the same guy on both Superman books. And so you had the potential to do stuff with them. And it's so frustrating because it just feels like this huge missed opportunity. And honestly, part of it is just because it's ending. I think this run could have continued to evolve and gotten pretty good if he had continued to grow. You know what I mean? Like, we keep building on this. The Red Cloud story finally wraps up and they move on and keep building with that. They keep building in the Superman title, or begin building in the Superman title, because that's the one that's felt really episodic to me of the two. But it's instead they're just cutting it short.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's sticking around full time. Part of me wonders if part of cost saving is that you don't pay Brian Michael Bendis to write that many books. I'm not saying that that's the case, but it would explain a lot, because we know that they're dialing back on a lot of his young reader books, right? Young Justice is getting canceled.
Yep.
A lot of the other ones that were part of that label, I think, were just miniseries. I think Young Justice was one of the only ongoings. So I'm not saying he's leaving DC. I don't think he's leaving DC, but I'm not sure it's a coincidence in an era where DC is scaling down that Bendis is suddenly writing fewer books.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. All right, in other DC news, the Justice League event Endless Winter brings back Black Lightning and introduces surprise new DC villain called Frost King, who takes over the former site of Superman's Fortress of Solitude. The event will run across 9 issues, including ongoing series The Justice League, The Flash, Aquaman, and Justice League Dark titles. All the issues will be written by Andy Lanning and Ron Mars.
Ooh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that creative team. And I'd say that as Ron Mars being the comic that got me into superhero comics. I don't know. I don't know about that. It's been a while since his prime.
Yes, it has. But he's had some good comics. He had a cross-gen comic I really liked. What was it called? Sojourn, I think.
And when was that written?
It was in the early 2000s. I do realize that, Cletus.
That's all I'm saying. It's an intriguing plot. And like you said, they said that Black Adam's coming back in it, which is... I mean, it makes sense because you want that character to be around. I just think it's weird that New 52 really screwed certain characters that were fairly big at the time and then just completely went away. Obviously, Wally's the big one, right? I mean, that's,
right.
I think, example number one. That was almost the entire idea behind Rebirth, is like, where the hell has Wally been? But Black Adam was... I would say around 52, when that was coming out and everything, Black Adam was one of the big DC characters. Like, that was – most DC fans would have listed him as probably one of their, more interesting characters. I know everybody that I knew at that point that was reading DC stuff and new DC stuff really liked that character. Like, that's how much in the forefront he was, and then he just went away. And I know that he was the villain in the – New 52 Shazam, and he's great in that. I mean, the way that thanks in large part to John's and Gary Frank's artwork. And then he popped up in Forever Evil. He's one of the villains in that. But that's really it. I mean, that was those are basically some of the only things that he was in. And it's just, yeah, I mean, if you've got a movie coming out with him, it's just one of the things, the big thing is that that movie should have come out 5 years ago. Because it hasn't, I mean, Black Adam, frankly, has moved out of the rotation, so to speak. And now it makes sense. You've got to move him back in.
Yeah.
He's got to become relevant again.
So I'm very curious about this event. So it's a cool idea.
I am also curious. I have low expectations though, but that means that if it's good, it's going to seem really good to me because it is going to be massively clearing the bar that I've set for it.
All right. And our last bit of regular DC news, Wonder Woman 1984 has been delayed till Christmas. I was bummed about that. I was looking forward to seeing it next month. Now we got to wait even longer.
I am disappointed too, but it makes sense. Like when you saw the box office numbers that Tenet had, there was just no way. I mean, I know Tenet has had some mixed reactions. I really liked it. I thought it was a great movie. But that's a movie you know should have done well in theaters. There's no way that wouldn't have done well in a normal box office setting, right?
Right.
And it did not. I mean, it just domestically, it just didn't make money. And that has nothing to do with the quality of the film. That's the world that we're living in right now. And you know, Warner Brothers, I think, has been pretty clear that they want to save Wonder Woman until they can make bank at the box office. And I think they will. Like, if it comes out in normal theater conditions, it will. And so I understand. I get why they're moving it. And honestly, I'm not sure that it's going to actually come out at Christmas either.
Yeah, I know. I'm afraid it's not either.
It might come out in the summer after all, just not 2020 summer.
All right. Well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk DC fandom.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
You know how Disney kind of like puts films on an assembly line, but you know that when you're getting something from Pixar, because it takes so long to craft, that there's a lot of care put into it.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Playing worldwide on radio 7 days a week, your favorite podcast app, and right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk DC fandom. All right, Cletus. DC fandom this past weekend did not seem as spectacular as the first one. But one thing I did really like about it is none of the stuff was live, so you could just watch whatever you wanted, what you wanted, when you wanted during the certain time span. And me personally, I was a little disappointed at first because I was watching stuff and realizing, wait a minute, I saw this during the last DC fandom. Like the Flash panel, I watched it and I was like, wait a minute, I think I've seen most of this before. Then I realized it was an extended version, but I couldn't tell what part of it was extended. So that was a little disappointing to me. But one of the panels that I watched that I really liked was the Superman and Lois panel. I really enjoyed that, and I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with that television series after watching that panel.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I felt bad because I had mixed feelings on the fandom for this one as a whole because it did do some of the things that I had wanted, where like I wanted more of a focus on comics, and they did have more comic book stuff, but I mean, it's hard to argue as a whole. There was, I feel like, in general, less interesting stuff going on.
Yeah.
I felt hypocritical for that because, like, I was like, I don't necessarily only need movie news, and that I still hold to that. I don't know. This just felt like it was that, but TV news for the most part, and with extra comic stuff sprinkled in.
Yeah. I think the bad part about it was we didn't get a whole lot of news out of this, really.
Yeah.
So, but let's dive.
I still think it'd be really cool to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see anything like this, more stuff like the like that Jim Lee thing that we saw, more like kind of peeling back the curtain. And honestly, not just with like, obviously for me being, you know, the creation of comics nerd that I am, like that peeling back the curtain on comics creation is cool for me, but you can do that stuff with like the TV shows and movies too, and have it be more like less a panel. And like, because it's a virtual thing, we don't need to hold to the conventions of a normal, you know, Comic-Con, right? Where they're right. panel focused. Like, you can do more like behind the scenes pre-taped stuff. I don't know. I just think that would be more interesting and worthwhile watching, at least for me.
Now, this the Superman and Lois panel that I watched was hosted by Jim Lee. And he showed us how to draw the Superman symbol. And it was really interesting because he said he learned how to do it from John Byrne. What they do is they make the diamond shape, and then he makes two fishes in the middle of it, and then creates the symbol around, or kind of forms the symbol with those two fishes. It was pretty cool. And what was cool with that panel was each of the actors he had on there, they all tried drawing the symbol, and then they showed their finished works. It was pretty cool, I thought. So
that's cool.
So we got to see a little bit of that during that panel. I thought that was pretty cool. That was different than some of the other panels I watched, where it was just the actors and stuff talking and asking them questions and stuff. I mean, they did.
Well, and I think that speaks to Jim Lee being a comic book guy, right?
Yeah.
And I think we need more of that, because I agree with you. That's awesome.
So,
because like you said, I mean, it's essentially a normal panel, but with that extra little bit thrown in, like just that little bit makes it more interesting.
So, and I'm really excited about the Superman show, because they're doing the family thing. It's going to take place in Smallville. Clark's going to have two teenage boys, and I'm just really interested in seeing a different version of Superman, because it's going to focus on the family. So you're going to have Superman being Superman, and Lois being the reporter. Of course, Clark's a reporter too, so you're going to see them dealing with that life, trying to deal with family life, and being in Smallville. I think it's going to be really interesting. All right, some of the DC fandom news that we got. One of the first things I have here is that Jim Lee says there's going to be more Earth One stories coming, and Batman is getting a third one. And this is what Jim said. He said, "We are still publishing the Earth One series. They're just not on a super regular schedule. Because we reached out to the top creators and gave them the time to tell their stories, whenever they finish their projects, we take them, package them, and publish them." So basically what Jim's telling us is they've reached out to creators and basically told them, here, this is what we want you to do, and when they get it done, that's when it gets done. So they're giving them all the time in the world to get these done. I guess that's why it's taken so long to get them back. But that's cool, because we're getting the same writer and artist. We're not having a bunch of different artists drawing these things. We're having one artist do it, and I think that's cool.
Well, and that's I believe that's a little bit of a shift in philosophy with that too. I think initially Earth One was meant to be a little bit like the Ultimates, not its own like publishing line in the same sense, like where it was, you know, trying to create ongoings, but it was trying to, it felt like, build that world. And I think the Superman ones do have different artists on them, but they also came out much closer together. But since that point, since like the Batman one, the first two are both Johns and Franks. Grant Morrison did the, I think there's only one Wonder Woman one, but that was in the incubator for a while. Like when I was doing my master's program in Scotland and we visited him, he was showing us like the artwork for it, and it didn't come out until I was working with you, Drew, here in Indiana.
So a long time.
not a short amount. It was at least a year, if not 2 years later, that it actually came out. And we were looking at, from all appearances, were essentially finished artwork, at least in terms of inks, not coloring, but inks were done or at least for some of the pages. But even looking at the Green Lantern one, like that was a big gap in between those. I feel like it's just been a changing philosophy in it, where initially I think they had this idea where they were going to put out a lot of these Earth One books, and they kind of established all these different characters. And I think it turned into more of a, okay, well, what if we just had these really good standalone graphic novels? And I think that's the smarter approach.
I agree. All right. Jim Lee tells us to expect big developments at DC in 2021, but don't expect 5G. There won't be a project called 5G or a big reboot or whatever, Lee says. We really want to focus on individual titles and organically build up individual characters over the course of the next year. So Jim's kind of giving us the direction that they're going now. So I'm kind of happy to hear there's no 5G coming, and that they're going to they're going to concentrate on individual characters, because I think that's what they need to do. And I think they're going to need to get away from these big epic stories too and just concentrate on different characters and telling stories.
I agree with you. And I think you can still do big epic stories because, to be honest, those are the stories that generally are going to sell. But I think if you can do them the way that, like, Snyder did Metal, and then by all appearances what Death Metal looks like it's going to be too, where there are these big events but they also aren't affecting other people, right? It's a big event comic without screwing over other writers at the company and other artists at the company. He's doing this big story that it's an event comic, it is, but I don't think you were, I certainly don't expect it to have any impact on the continuity of DC Comics, and I don't need it to. I think that's fine. It does, in a sense, what you want an event comic to do. It's telling a big epic story that you wouldn't normally expect to read during an ongoing book. But it's also not demanding that you be up to date with all of the other DC books, and it's changing the status quo of all these other DC books going forward. It's just telling a big epic story.
Right.
You can clearly tell from this, in case there was any doubt, which side Didio and Lee were on, because Didio's out and all of a sudden we're in this, like, let's focus more on individual stories, let's not reboot stuff constantly. So it's not, I don't think there's too much of a mystery there where those two stood.
Right. And other fandom news, the Flash solo movie starring Ezra Miller will include multiple DC characters on top of Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton's version of Batman. So far, the two versions of Batman are the only characters besides Flash confirmed to be in the film, but more are supposed to appear. And I'm really hoping that we hear that Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa are going to be in it. I'm hoping. We already know that Ray Fisher's in talks with being in the movie. I'm hoping this will be more epic than we were first wondering.
I think it's a cool idea. The one thing I think is really positive to take away from this is that, and this was already clear from some of the other news that we got, is that we're not doing a Flash origin story.
I know.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We really, especially with the TV show, I mean, we really do not need to see Barry Allen start all over again. And so I'm really glad that we're at least just telling he's the Flash, right? Just accept that Barry Allen is the Flash, and we're going to tell a story where he's the Flash. That's great. Yeah, and I'm excited. I still, part of me almost doesn't want them to actually do Flashpoint. I kind of want them to do their own thing and not call it Flashpoint. Like, I like the idea of it being a multiverse story. I love that. And I would even be totally cool with the other Justice League cast members being in the movie and it just doing its own story. Part of me kind of doesn't want them to do Flashpoint because you know it won't be what the comic is. And I understand that, and that's fine. But then, like, I would, in that case, just prefer them to tell their own story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So I agree with you. I think they should do something different than Flashpoint. But what I have a feeling is it's going to be different from Flashpoint, but they're still going to call it Flashpoint.
It's just so frustrating. It's just call it something else. I get it. I know it's such a good name. I understand. It's so clever. It's got Flash in it. But like, you can tell an epic multiverse Flash story and not call it Flashpoint. It's not that hard.
No, it's not.
Just don't call it The Rise of Flash. So I guess maybe in that sense, maybe I should just accept that they'll call it Flashpoint, because you know that that's probably the backup title.
Yep.
or Flash Rise of the Multiverse. Oh, God. What if I just gave them ideas, Drew?
I don't think they're going to go with them. All right. In other DC news, HBO Max has renewed Doom Patrol for a third season. So that's really awesome.
Oh, thank God.
I knew it was coming.
I wasn't that worried about it, but like, you know, when it's not for sure confirmed, there's always that like, oh, it's not canceled, is it?
I didn't think it was canceled.
Yeah, that's great news.
Yes, it is. All right, DC Legends of Tomorrow has cast Chicago PD alum Lizeth Chavez as an alien authority, Spooner Cruz. There is no comic character by that name that I am aware of, but could this be a cousin of Jessica Cruz, maybe?
That would require them to actually fulfill the Green Lantern tease that they've had for 8 years. Or I guess, you know, actually, now that I think about it, having a cousin of Jessica Cruz on the show but never actually having Jessica Cruz would be incredibly in character for CW.
Yes, it would. I'm excited about Legends of Tomorrow being a space adventure this time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like that, you know, I like the magic stuff, but I like that they haven't pigeonholed themselves. I was curious a little bit if that's just what they were going to be, was just magic from now on. And I was like, I mean, the Legends are kind of all just about like doing new stuff, right? So I am glad that it didn't even need to be aliens. It was just something, again, I liked the magic stuff. It's something other than magic I think is good for the show. I think it's just the DNA of that show. It needs to, the topic needs to change.
I can tell you one thing. Space is a great backdrop for the Green Lantern Corps. Just saying.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if we get one Green Lantern show up.
I'm also just saying that a comedy show about time travel is a great booster gold, and we've seen where that's gone, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just a little bit bitter.
All right, the last piece of news that I have for Fandom, Young Justice will be getting another season titled Young Justice Phantoms. Now, the panel didn't reveal whether Justice League Phantoms will be on the DC Universe or if it's going to be on HBO Max, but I have a feeling it's going to be on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's going to be on HBO Max. Let's not kid ourselves here. There was some cool comic book news. They showed some previews of like, there was a small kind of showcase for the upcoming Rorschach series that Tom King's doing. And that looks really cool, because there was at least one of the scenes that they showed was sort of a flashback scene to within the Watchmen story when Ozymandias was trying to form that team of them, of the second batch of heroes, including Rorschach. So it looked like there was a little bit of, you know, it wasn't necessarily all set in the time of what we think of when we think of the plot of Watchmen. It looked like some of it was set further back. And that looks, I mean, Tom King writing that story, I'm already sold on it. But seeing some of the stuff for it, I'm pretty curious to look at that. And I think there's at least one other series that they were showing a little bit of. But there was one of the things I appreciated looking at, they actually were showing some comic book highlights. And that was cool. It's just a shame, because those are naturally just, they're just not going to get the same headlines that, you know, an Aquaman panel is going to get.
Exactly. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. What's your shout out, Cletus?
Well, we had such a comeback here with Superboy Prime. I thought I would I've shouted out about this comic before, but Sinestro Corps War is post Infinite Crisis, but I feel like is one of the last major times that Superboy Prime is a major player in the DC universe. Like, he's around after that. Like, he has his own little Black Lantern tie-in during Blackest Night, but I feel like the last time he was a major player in a DC story was the Sinestro Corps War, in which he continues to be a great villain in the hands of Johns.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to thank everyone for all the birthday wishes I got over the weekend, because I got a lot of them, and I really appreciate it. So I just want to give a shout-out to everybody, thanking them for that. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we got Batman, Catwoman, Detective Comics, Justice League, and we'll be reviewing Justice League Dark Apocalypse War animated movie. So I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah, me too. I've been pretty eager to check that movie out.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move off.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.